Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Good day once again, everybody. Thank you for hopping on board with the latest edition of Gun on One, the podcast. I'm Derek Gunn. And, well, when you look at what happened to the Eagles on Sunday against the Chargers, it was another winnable game situation, and yet we are looking at another loss. The theme continues to be the same with this Eagles team, for whatever the case may be, and people are losing their minds. It is frustrating to the media, frustrating to fan base, and I know it's extremely frustrating to former players who played the game at a high level. So I brought in for this show a former player who played the game at the highest level to the best of his ability. And I hate to tell him this because his head's already big enough, but he is definitely one of my all-time favorite Eagles. Former Eagles cornerback Bobby Taylor. BT, how you doing, man?
D Gunn, it's a pleasure, man. First of all, I miss you too.
Like what?
I know you definitely were, you know, one of my favorites there when I was in Philly. You made it fun playing there. You were fair. I mean, you were tough, honest, yeah, which you should be, but I feel like you were very fair. And, you know, we could have conversations on the record. We could have conversations off the record.
Yes.
You know, I think you gave me advice. I gave you advice during the times that we were there, and, you know, we shared, you know, some good times. We shared some bad times. I mean, I think more good times than bad.
Absolutely.
I miss you too, brother.
Yeah, man. You know, back in the day, and that was when we were just starting a show called Post Game Live, and I love telling this story all the time. What made that show work, especially with me outside the locker room interviewing players, was I was blessed to be among a group of players that were not just football players, but they were characters. And and all I had to do was point a mic in the direction of a Bobby Taylor, of a Troy Vincent, a Donovan McNabb, a Trey Thomas, a John Runyon, a Ike Reeves, a Jeremiah Trotter. It goes on and on, Chad Lewis. And y'all basically took over the show. The show was the show was self-contained. You would come out dressed like you stepped out of GQ every Sunday. You know, Troy Vincent, you could tell he was destined for great things. He was the businessman. Yep. And then you had the other guys who were young but wanted to stay fashionable with the trends. Hollis Thomas had so much gold and silver on, I could barely see him outside the locker room. It was blinding me with all the jewelry he wore. And I won't say the figure, but at one time I asked Hollis, I said, right now, how much is all the diamonds that you have on worth? And what he told me was, I'll tell you after the podcast what he told me. And I'm like, why in the world would you walk around like this with that much jewelry on? But I don't want to deviate from the norm. You know, I know you still watch this Philadelphia Eagles team very closely. And I know you watched them play the Chargers on Sunday. But I'm telling you something, man. Their pass coverage is driving people out of their minds. In a general perspective, tell me what you're seeing from the secondary, man.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I'm definitely I mean, that's the only team I'm a fan of, Philly. That's where I played.
Right.
You know, so my heart is there. I speak in we, not they and those guys. It's we for me, whether it's, you know, doing good times, whether it's doing bad times. And so right now, obviously, things aren't going like I would like it. And, you know, I'm pretty sure the fans there in the area, in the region, and then all over the place are frustrated as well. And, you know, when you look at yesterday's game, it was one of those situations where, I mean, let's just take the second half, where from a defensive standpoint, being a former defensive player, I mean, the Chargers had their way. I mean, Justin Herbert, I think he's a great quarterback. I liked him in college when he was there at Oregon. And you can just see his maturation process. And, you know, when you look at the strengths of, or the supposedly strengths of the Eagles, it's on the defensive side. And you think from a defensive line perspective, you know, guys could get more pressure on the quarterback, more even just some hits. That wasn't taking place. The Chargers, they've had issues from an offensive line perspective. And so going into the game, I just knew that we could put some stress on that team from our defensive line, and that didn't help. And we didn't play complimentary football on the defensive side of the ball. When you look at some of the coverages, when I just sit back and look, I just squirm because I feel like, yeah, there's been some injuries, but from a communication standpoint, you need to always be on the same page. And I look at some of the formations that came out, and, you know, granted, I'm not out there on the field, but just from a body language standpoint, it's like, okay, are we talking when these guys are getting in these bunch formations to say, hey, there's a chance that this guy's going to come across the field. I need a little help from a linebacker perspective where you can maybe bump the receiver. I think that was a big play by Williams down the field, maybe 40, 50 yards.
49 yards, yep.
And I definitely know that was one of those situations where pre-snap, from a cornerback perspective, you need to be talking to your safety saying, hey, there's a chance that this guy's going to run a route that where you can take over and I can replace you. And when you look at when the pass was completed, both the cornerback and the safety was inside of the receiver as opposed to there being a bracket. And when you think about pass coverages and how you pass things off, that shouldn't happen. And, you know, for me, it's one of those things where, okay, guys, we need to get back in the classroom. We need to talk to the coaches. And that's one of the things that I feel like helped us. Like, we weren't only just talented, but we talked about so much. Jim gave us leeway. Leslie Frazier, they gave us leeway to be able to come to them and say, hey, guys, like, what are you seeing? Like, we had a exercise that we did every Friday where we would come into the classroom or meeting room or whatever folks want to. I call it the classroom because, I mean, it's, you know, you go into class.
Right.
You need to take it seriously as such. And so we go in the classroom and Jim would give us a worksheet to say, okay, it's first and 10. They're coming out in this formation. The ball is located here. What do you guys, what are some of the coverages that you like that we worked on during the week? It's second and short. They're coming out in this personnel. This is the scenario. They're backed up or they're on the opposite side of the 50. So it's conversation like that we were having as players along with the coaches. And I'm not saying that those guys aren't having that inside their classroom, but you need to have that because let's just say, for instance, the communication system goes down and the coaches up in the press box can't talk to the defensive coordinator on the sideline. And as a defense, you don't get the call when you need to make a call yourself, because sometimes that happens. And in the event of something like that, I mean, you need to be able to like say, okay, this is what we worked on during the week. This is not a panic situation. And so these were our top three calls on third and six when they came out in this particular personnel, and we're going to call that and be confident about it to know that, you know what, we're going to be able to get off the field. And so if you're not having those type of discussion, because you spend more time in the classroom during the week than you do on the football field because of, you know, short weeks, you know, the seasons are long, guys are banged up. And so if you aren't taking those type of things seriously or what have you, and just think that, like, you know, just because I'm one of the, you know, top 0.7% most talented players in the world, mm-hmm. I can just roll out there on Sunday and get it done. And that's not what's happening.
Do you think their defense shows too much respect to opposing offenses? It seems like when they play upper echelon offenses, it's like they just go into an over respect mode for who they're playing against.
I'm not sure about that, right? Because like I said, I probably could answer that more accurately if I attended some practices and just saw, like, okay, when the ones against ones are going against each other, like, what's the atmosphere? Because I know, and this is one thing that Andy did a great job with, even if it was the latter part of the season, there were probably 4 to 6 plays on Thursday, I can remember specifically, where we went against Donovan and those guys, like, good on good, one-on-ones, whether it's third down, whether we worked on blitz pickup, whether it was in the red zone, goal line, where he was like, look, guys, I'm going to allow you to take the pads off after this period, but we're going to bang and go one against one, good against good. And that just got your blood flowing during the week with something that I think that's great. And it just puts you in that mindset to where, like, listen, you my teammate, but right now I'm finna, like, kick your blah, 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 whatever, whatever. You know what I mean? And so yeah. You have to have that type of mentality. And it's not something that you can just turn on and off the field, turn on Sundays when you get on the field. And so, you know, I'm not sure if they're giving these guys that they go against too much credit. I know a lot of times in the offseason now with, you know, guys living in so many different places, they train against a lot of these guys or what have you. And, you know, maybe they're friends. But, you know, when you step out there on the field, you have to be able to, like, be ready, go against these guys, maybe not help them up sometime, because you're not only trying to win physically, there's so much from a psychological standpoint and a mental standpoint to where you're trying to win. Because I know for a fact there were times during the game where they knew, whether it was myself, Troy, Dog, Hugh, Carlos Emmons, Corey Simon, Trotter, or what have you, to where from an offensive standpoint, the offensive coordinator on the opposing team, they probably were discouraged to call certain plays just because they knew how we were going to play that. They knew, like, you know what, if we run this shallow crossing route by this Z receiver, like, Brian Dawkins is going to be waiting in that alley, and, like, it's going to be a problem. And so I better not call that, because he's going to get blown up, or it's going to be an interception, or Hugh Douglas is going to get to the quarterback, or what have you. And we would have those conversations out there on the field. It'll be time during the game to where Hugh will look back at me and be like, hey, man, can I get some coverage? And I'll be like, Hugh, like, we covering guys for 4 and 5 seconds. Can you get to the quarterback in less than 2 or 3 seconds? Like, we would literally, like, have those conversations, like, in between the lines, out there on the field or what have you. And we just had that type of relationship where we constantly challenged each other. And it wasn't all about my success. Like, I was just as happy about the next guy having success as I was about myself. And I do know for a fact in today's NFL and just sports in general, there are some athletes that are a little bit more selfish now, because you have social media, everybody feels like they're a brand and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I can go on and on in regards to that, but I totally, like, disagree with it. A lot of these guys, listen, y'all are just high paid employees or whatever, working for a brand. You're not particularly a brand yourself or what have you. And so, you know, there may be a certain level of selfishness and things of that nature, but, you know, you just have to, like, challenge each other, like, regardless. I mean, I can remember, you know, going against, I mean, I grew up in Texas. I mean, I tell this story a lot of the times, like, majority of my family was, when we played the Cowboys, look, cousin, look, nephew, I want you to be successful, but hey, I'm rooting for the Cowboys. This is my family.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? And so just imagine that. Just imagine growing up, you know, establishing a name for myself in Texas, going back to play the Cowboys during that time in Texas Stadium where, you know, they had 5 and 6 Hall of Famers on their offense. I'm not just team, but just on their offense. And for me, it was like, man, I'm trying to like go out and like make a name for myself. Like, I don't care nothing about my family liking the team or what have you, growing up watching the Cowboys or what, like, I'm trying to make a name for myself, and whatever it takes for me to be successful out there on the field, I'm going to try to do that.
I bet you had a lot of family that would also say, hey, Bobby, could you get me a couple of tickets to the game for the Eagles Cowboys?
Listen, so I didn't know that at first, right?
Right.
That I thought my following was so strong where me being a Philadelphia Eagle, like, automatically qualified, like, made them Eagles fans.
Right.
And so the first couple of years, man, I'm like busting my balls, like spending all of this extra money or what have you to go and get tickets from other guys because, we only got a certain allotment or
right.
what have you. And guys already knew. When it was Dallas week and we were going back to Texas, listen, I'm going to be hitting you up. The trade-off was I would pay for the tickets. You know, all of my family would bring in, like, all kind of, like, crazy food so we could eat good and things of that nature or what have you. But I had to have those tickets. And so this was probably, like, maybe 2 or 3 years in. And, like, my grandmother, she pulled me to the side, and she was like, baby, I don't know if you know this or not, but majority of your uncles, your cousins, they're a Cowboy fan. I was like, really? I was like, really, Gigi? Like, are you serious? Man, listen, it's family to this day that we, like, our relationship is okay, but not like it was, because I took that privilege away. Was like, okay, that's how it is. Well, shit, go to somebody else and get them, and let them get you some tickets.
No.
And
they
Yeah. Like, I totally, like, stripped that privilege away. And I don't care personally, but it's like cousins and whomever else that, you know, they feel like, oh, Bobby, he thinks he blah, 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 whatever, whatever, whatever.
Right.
He won't even get us tickets to the game. And I'm like, man, I don't even entertain him. I'm like, listen, if you're not a fan of me, you're not a fan of the Eagles, watch that from home. Like, period. I almost cursed just then, but watch that from home. Like, that became my mentality probably 3 years in. And, man, I saved so much money and was just, you know, in a better place. Because just imagine that. You really thinking your family members, like, fan, not only fans of you, but the team that you play for. I had to strip it away from them, D.
You let family loyalty come between family bond?
Oh, yeah. Because it's almost like, you know, because you don't, it's like, you don't even support my job. Like, this is my job. Like, okay, yeah, this is a game. It's a sport and all of this type of stuff or what have you. And all of the other benefits that come with being a professional football player that they were afforded. Like, I don't even want you coming to the hotel. Like, don't even visit me. Like, when I come back home,
wow.
don't visit me. Like, because I don't even want to, like, fake it, because you know how it is as the week progress. You know, you have Monday. Hopefully it's a victory Monday. Then Tuesday we off. Wednesday is pretty much like our first, you know, work day or what have you of the week. And then as it ramps up toward the weekend, especially, you know, going against, you know how it is. You know how it is for fans.
That's
for
right.
Dallas, how they get prepared from a tailgating perspective or what have you, getting ready. And you're a chef yourself, getting your ingredients and all of that. So mentally, as a player, I'm getting ready, like, okay, this is what I'm going to wear when I get back home, blah, blah, blah. I want to see this person and, you know, this, that, and the third. We play at this time. You know, hopefully when we get to the hotel, you know, John Madden, Pat Summerall doing the game. Hopefully they call one of myself to go talk to them. Like, oh, I'm getting, like, my headspace is there. And so, like, I don't even want to be around family or friends or whomever that aren't trying to give me something positive that I can go into the game and use as fuel to help me be successful out there on the field.
That's crazy, man. Hey, look, I'm going to throw a stat at you pertaining to this current Eagles defense, and I want to hear your response to this. Through 9 games, opposing quarterbacks have completed an average of 75% of their passes against this Eagles defense. That includes 5 quarterbacks that have completed 80 or better percent. 1 quarterback completed 91% of his passes. Can you imagine playing in a secondary or on a defense that allowed something like that?
Absolutely not. We took so much, even during the times where we were building, right?
Right.
And we played hard all throughout the game. And then somehow at the end, we found a way to, we end up losing, right? Respectfully, when we sat down and watched the film, now, okay, there were some occasions where when we watched the film, it was an embarrassment. Mm. But for the majority of the time, like, we were respected. We were respected amongst ourselves. We were respected, you know, amongst our peers, the opposing coaches, and things of that nature. And so I saw that because I saw where Herbert, I think he was, what, over 300 and almost 50 yards passing, 80%.
Yep.
I mean, that's like, if you're playing basketball, somebody's scoring 40, 50 points on you. So collectively as a whole, from a defensive standpoint, no one should be stepping up to the podium saying, well, I did good. Well, I did my part. If I don't know, guys, I don't know if guys are saying it. I hope right, not. But right. I'm just, you know, making a general statement.
Right.
If that's the mentality, it's like, I mean, we're doomed. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm saying me because I'm a part of being a Philadelphia Eagle, whether it's a, you know, a Victory Monday or mm-hmm. it's Black Monday, I guess if you want to call it, in today. And so, that's tough. I mean, it's one of those things where quarterbacks and opposing teams, they should look forward to playing us.
Woo. Yeah, a lot of people are starting to say that.
Why wouldn't they?
Right.
I mean, because right. Justin Herbert was clean. You look at it. You look at his uniform at the end. I mean, I don't think did we get a sack yesterday?
Nope.
I mean, it's been multiple games this year where we haven't gotten a sack, and that's a problem, a major problem. So why wouldn't opposing offenses be looking forward to? I mean, if I'm the next team that's playing the Eagles. Mm-hmm. If I'm that offensive coordinator, I'm calling Chargers offensive coordinator. Like, hey, send me some. Of, like, what was your thinking? Like, send me some of those plays that you guys. I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny. But
right.
That's what happens in the league because we all know this is a copycat league, and why wouldn't you? If you aren't the next offensive coordinator. That's getting ready to go against the Eagles, and you're not looking to some of that stuff.
Mm.
Hey, well, why? I mean, you're not doing your job.
What should defensive leaders be doing and saying to teammates in the locker room every day in practice leading up to the next game so they don't start turning on each other?
Well, first of all, I mean, you have to be a leader by example, right?
Right.
And to be a leader, you have to be a producer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are, let's just say, one of the defensive linemen or what have you, right? And not to point out defensive linemen. If you are one of the defensive linemen, right? And you are designated as a leader, for one, are you producing personally yourself, right? Because mm-hmm. I don't think this is talked about enough when we talk about leadership, because a lot of times the first thing people say, you have to lead by example, which that is right. But you can't be leading and not producing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't go together the way that I digest leadership
right.
or what have you. And so, for one, that needs to be taking place. Of course, you need to be leading by example. But one of a small exercise that goes so far when you think about your peers, your meeting time when you're inside the building, because a lot of times when you get ready to watch the film, right, you just break off into your individual groups, mm-hmm. you know, with the secondary, the linebackers, the D-line. But, like, there are times where, you know what, Jim would come in and we already would know it, right? Because we were self-conscious, because you can't be thinking that just because you in the league and on the team,
right,
that, like, you're the bomb. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not producing, like, hey, man, you know, it's a chance that, like, on down the line, you know, they may be looking at getting rid of you. And so Jim would, at times, like, we would have our collective defensive team meeting where we would watch the film and he wouldn't even talk.
Wow.
He just put the film on, like, and he may run one play 5-6 times in a row. And so the way we watch film was you have the end zone view where the camera is basically, like, you know, up in the air behind you from the end zone and then a sideline perspective. So we will watch all of that so you can see everything to where it's like, shit, who hustling? Who doing their job?
Yeah.
Right? Because that's a big part of it as well. You know what I mean? And so when we were in those, in that atmosphere and in that environment, mm-hmm. that spoke volumes. Because when you got a guy that's like you out here fighting for your life, because there're going to be cases where you're just going to go against somebody that's just a bad MF on the opposite side of the field.
Right.
But they're getting paid. And, like, you out there fighting for your life. And on a particular call, we went on it all over, all during the week, when he lined up in this position and we know he's going to come across either the D-line, the defensive end or the outside linebacker is going to get a hit on him, to help you be able to, like, you know, cover this particular guy.
Right.
Because we know these are some of their bread and butter plays. And then you watch the film and it's like, man, that didn't happen. So you start looking at your teammate like, yo, man, like, what's going on? You know what I mean? And so I don't know if that's already happened. And I don't know if from an exercise standpoint during the week, they're breaking it down from that perspective. But, like, when I'm disappointing my dog, mm-hmm. I'm out there, like, fighting, and he's fighting for his life, and I'm not doing what I need to do. Like, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And then also, you have to think about, like, what are you doing during the week? You know, because, like, now when you have, you know, all of these different media podiums and probably opportunities that, like, guys have, because everybody wants to be a part of, you know, guys that play in the NFL, yep. right? Just because greatest game in the world.
Yep.
Or what. You see the ratings, you know, we've been killing it for, as a whole, from a viewership standpoint. And so everybody wants a part of that. Like, what are you doing during the week? Like, are you accepting every appearance? You know, are you getting rest? Are you taking care of your body? Or are you, you know, are you running, you know, like, what are you doing to take care of yourself? Because guys know that as well. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, there are just a lot of, like, things like that that need to happen. And so so the leaders, you know, they need to, like, rally the troops. And for me, I would rather guys do something like that inside collectively, as opposed to going to the media and subliminally tweeting and all of that. Like, man, I don't communicate like that. Like,
right.
I'm on social media to a certain degree or what have you, but I was always about, like, man, let me go to my man locker and be like, yo, mm-hmm. Man, you supposed to be here. Like, if I'm expecting you to be in the deep middle or what have you, or if I'm expecting you to, on this particular play, cut to this receiver and then I replace you and take over your responsibility and you not there, mm-hmm. like that's an issue. Like, and I'm gonna call you on it. Like, I'm not going to my agent, I'm not going to my wife. Right. I'm not going to, you know, any my girlfriend, like, I'm not going to the media. I'm going, like, straight to you and be like, look, hold up, like, stop that film. Like, it's been times where we watching film, like, hold up, stop that film, where guys have left from our meeting room and went in another position group and been like, dude, you lied to me, because you go to the sideline and you talk or what have you, and, you know, they got now with the little iPads and all of that type of stuff that sideline. So from a technology standpoint, like, you can't lie, you can't miss it. You know, maybe in the past when technology wasn't what it was, you know, you could miss certain things, but, like, you can't miss that. And so if it's certain things where, you know, guys can't hide, like we all need to like talk about that. And so if they're putting that type of pressure on themselves inside the building or what have you, you know, I can respect that. But if that's not happening, I mean, that's a major issue. So, you know, from a leadership standpoint, I mean, you have to produce, you have to lead by example, you know, and you have to like be able to like rally the troops to say, hey, and know how to like talk and communicate to guys. Because one of the things I hate, and we would call this out when we were watching other teams getting ready to prepare
right
for the next game, where, you know, say on a play, you got one of the DBs or what have you back, and he pointing. I'm like, man, if you point at me, like, we're going to fight, like, right there. But not ever point at me and say, blah, blah, oh, you didn't do this or you didn't do that, because I never do that to you, even if you are in the wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I would never do that. And so I see a lot of that, like, across, and not just, you know, from the Eagles' perspective.
Right.
But just in general, around the league, where you got guys that's just like, rebuking other players, like right on the field. And it's like, nah, we're not going to have that.
it's a different game, man. It's a different game from when you played. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, Fletcher Cox came out to the media and said, hey, what they're asking me to do is, that's not what I do. You know, that's not how I function. Shouldn't those kind of statements, not just from a Fletcher Cox, but from team leaders in general, be kept behind closed doors talking to your defensive coordinator?
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't matter how hot the heat is getting outside. Because, see, it's tough in Philly, right?
Right.
And this is why I'm going to point the finger back at you. Like, you guys are some educated, I'm talking about a lot of the media guys,
right,
like yourself. You right. got Ray Digg up there.
Yeah.
You got, you know, some of my former teammates, Barry, got Ike.
Yep.
And a lot of those guys or what have you. But even outside of that, you have media guys that are very educated when it comes to X's and O's, and we can't trick you all, right?
Right. Right.
And so when you guys come and give your perspective, like hot, like right after the game, it just adds to the fire. And I know guys that probably pisses them off, right?
Right.
But you guys have a job to do, because you can't expect for it always to be, you know, roses and candy and you're getting, you know, all of these congratulations, because that's just not the world that we live in.
Right.
You know, and so you guys like make it hot. And when you add on top of that, the Philadelphia fan base, how, you know, I love them, how crazy they could be, how, I mean, in some cases, just out of their minds they can be. They have high expectations, and rightfully so. And so as a player, you know, you jumping on social media, and you're trending and wonder why you're trending, and
right,
you're hearing all of these things. And so that can, you got to have thick skin, man. You have to have thick skin. And so with that being said, you still can't let the family business get out in the street.
Are you trying to say we're troublemakers in the media? Is that what you're trying to say?
Hey, listen, I'm not going to say you guys are troublemakers, but you're good at making trouble sometimes by telling the whole truth. And so with that, you just have to, as a player, as hard as it may be, right?
Right.
You have to put that, you have to put all of that aside. And you can't let the family business get out there in the street. And so when statements like that are made, I mean, like, that just adds fuel to the fire. And I would think with Fletcher being, you know, the great player that he's been, he helped bring a Super Bowl
right
to Philadelphia. And I'm thankful for that. You know, he's made numerous Pro Bowls, all pros. You have to go and sit down and say, hey, coach, I'll need to talk with you.
Mm.
And just be and be respectful from that standpoint, because I can remember when Andy got the head job, Jim Johnson, he's our defensive coordinator, and probably like those first couple of mini camps, I mean, me and him like bumped heads. And it was nothing about the X's and O's. It was just about me being hurt, even though the disruption and the change needed to happen. We needed to get a new head coach at the time.
Right.
I was happy for Ray and Emmett Thomas for drafting me and bringing me in and teaching me so much. But, you know, that had ran its course and we needed a new coach. And so Andy and those guys came in and it was just me being upset that those guys were no longer there. It wasn't anything about the X's and O's. And so, like, they would ask me to do this and play this. And, you know, I played inside. I played outside. I mean, I was just like, wherever you need me to play or what have you.
Right.
And, you know, we're playing three cornerbacks at the time. And I was just mad just because. Like, our head coach got fired. We got these new guys. And, you know, I knew of Leslie Frazier playing for the Bears.
Yep.
When they had Michael Singletary and all of those guys, Richard Dent. But, you know, I didn't know him personally. I didn't know no Spags. I didn't know Ron Rivera. I didn't know John Harbaugh. I didn't know any of those people, right? So it was just the point of change. And myself and Jim during the summer, you know, we just sat down and talked, you know, had a beer. And, you know, he talked about, you know, where he came from, how he envisioned playing me, how he envisioned our defense being. And it was just two men, because at the end of the day, like, I'm a man. Like, you're my coach, but I'm a man.
Right.
You know, Fletcher Cox is a man. The defensive coordinator is a man. So it's like, have those conversations and say, and I don't know if those come, and even if he did, even if he has had those conversations in the past, right? Mm. And maybe the defensive coordinator is stubborn and saying, you know what, this is my defense, because you have that as well, right?
Right.
You have some
yep.
that feel like, this is my defense. I need this type of player to play in my defense or offense, and that's the only way we could be successful. Now, coaches like that, I know I would bump heads with them, because for one, I feel like I can play any defense, whether it's you want me to play zone, you want me to play man, you want me to just be out there on the island, like whatever. Want me to play inside at the nickel? I can play on the left side, on the inside, I can play on the right. It doesn't, you want me to blitz me sometime.
Mm-hmm.
I had a responsibility of knowing all of the positions around me as well, just in case somebody get hurt, I could slide here. And I think all players should be like that, right? Because in the nature of our sport, right, guys are gonna get hurt, guys are gonna get nicked up. And what if I need to move you inside, or what if I need to move you from left corner to right corner? And you like, coach, I just play left corner. Like, that's a problem. The more tools you can have in your tool belt, the more successful that could just make you and more valuable
yep.
at the end of the day, right? And so if you had this one track mind of I can only play this way, because I was actually watching some of the game with the, because typically, like, when I watch games, I don't even have the sound on. Like, I don't want to be distracted about what they're talking about. I just want to, like, look at it myself, because when we're in the classroom, when as a player, it's not sound on or anybody talking.
Mm-hmm.
So I have, like, my wife, she like, why are you watching TV? You don't have the sound on. Like, honey, that's like how I watch film. Like, it's something that when I'm at the practice facility watching film, it's not music playing, it's not sound playing, whatever, or what have you. And so one of the guys, I think it's Charles Davis, was doing the game when I was listening to it and watching it. And he was saying that the Chargers, they obviously had some got cornerbacks that was out, Asante Samuel Jr. I forgot yep. the other guy's name. He was out of the game. But they practice where the coach will just move a safety to corner, a corner to safety, interchangeable like that, just as an exercise. And I just thought that was like so genius, right? Because for one, it keeps you on your P's and Q's, and it also teaches you, which is more important to where I not only need to know my job,
right?
You know, the guy on the left of me, then you go to the guy on the right of me, the guy in front of me, behind me, and definitely my safety or what have you.
Mm.
And so by that, it just puts you in the right mindset of I'm just this small link in this chain. And if I'm not doing my part or being focused on my part or what have you, like, for example, I noticed I don't know if it was the end of the fourth quarter, the third quarter, where they had a real bunch formation. First of all, they lined up, the Chargers lined up fast.
Right.
And it was a bunch formation. And I think Slay was a defender on the left. He was playing left corner at the time. And they threw it to the big receiver. He missed the tackle and the guy went in and scored the touchdown. So if you go back and look at that play, his eyes got caught inside, which allowed the receiver to run the quick out. And he was late getting to it. And by late getting to it, he was in a bad position.
Right.
To make the tackle. The guy was bigger than him anyway, but I feel like if he wasn't late from his eyes looking inside and just looking at that receiver, because that's his key, and he missed that. He was late getting back outside trying to make the tackle. The guy walks in the end zone. And so it's just things like that that you have to be focused on. And, you know, and if you're not, like, I mean, that's a major problem. And I just think that as games go on, seasons go on, and right. if other guys get hurt, you have interchangeable parts coming in and out. I mean, you know, if it's not taken care of, I mean, it'll be worse as we get, you know, to the latter part of the season. I feel like I'm just shaking my head. I'm like, man, Thanksgiving gonna be you know, Christmas gonna be brutal. I'm in Texas. You know, luckily Dallas lost yesterday. Like, man, I'll be getting bombarded with just, you know, friends, family, blah, blah, blah. I got them yesterday, even though we lost. I got them yesterday.
Yeah.
Because when I tell you it's been rough, it's rough being from Texas, living in Texas, being an Eagles fan, being a former Eagle, it's tough. It's tough. I ain't gonna lie to you.
If Jonathan Gannon's defense continues on its current course, do you think that he will be back another season?
Well, that's a great question, right? And I wanted to ask you this.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you get asked this. First, like, do you feel like they hired the right head coach?
I think they hired a coach that they felt they could control, which is what I think that was the case when they hired Doug Peterson initially. And then when Doug Peterson won his Super Bowl and Doug Peterson began to establish himself, I believe he began to butt heads because he wanted to make more of his own decisions in terms of how this team was going to be moving forward. So the two minds could not come to a mutual understanding, and all of a sudden he's gone. Now you bring in another guy. But you also have to take into consideration, from what we've heard, there were certain coaching candidates they wanted to interview that declined to be interviewed by the Eagles. So what does that tell you? That some people did not want to come to Philadelphia when you consider they just got rid of the franchise quarterback. Now the Super Bowl winning coach is gone. Most of the team that helped win that Super Bowl have been dismantled. Why in the world would I want to go in a mess like this? Now, I don't want to judge Nick Sirianni completely by his first year, because if you go back, after Doug Peterson's first year, a lot of people wanted Doug Peterson out of here after that first year. And, oh, by the way, he won a Super Bowl his second year. See, so right now, a lot of people, they want Nick Sirianni, Jonathan Gannon out of here. And but let's face it, it's a bit, bottom line is a business. And it's about the numbers. And right now, when you look at the defensive coordinator's numbers, okay, your personnel is allowing quarterbacks to complete passes at a 75% clip. You've had five individuals complete over 80% of their passes against you. Doesn't that put your job in jeopardy? Because there's no such thing as longevity in the NFL unless you're producing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know he should definitely be on notice,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But it goes back to that education that you just gave me as other individuals not wanting to even interview for the job,
right?
Right. So if that was out there during that time, it's still there if they decide to fire the defensive coordinator.
True.
Right.
True.
To where, I mean, because if I'm a coach, I want to be, I would be mindful of those things because that's important. Mm-hmm. And I think from a public and fan perspective, which, you know, they just want you to win. Like,
right.
Period.
Right.
A lot of times they don't even bother even listening. I know in Philadelphia, there's a more of a following from a sports radio perspective and mm-hmm. Folks listening to shows like yours as well.
Yeah.
And so if I'm the owner, I'm checking in with these guys first and foremost, like every week. I'm not going to meddle, but if I'm an owner of a franchise, there has to be a check-in. And my mentality would be every week we are, for whatever reason, trying to win. And so your game plan, the players that you're playing, granted that, you know, guys are healthy and they're available, mm-hmm. like we're trying to win, like every week. Now, if there's an instance where ownership or GM has the mindset and from a coaching standpoint, you get knowledge of, well, you know what? They're just really looking forward to next year, right? Then in my mind, as that coordinator, you need to professionally, I think and probably make some decisions for yourself as well. Because if you're working for an organization, right, and they're not trying to provide you with the best tools to be successful, but they still expect X, Y, and Z result at the end of the day.
Right.
That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big problem. And I'm happy that I'm not in a situation like that. As an owner or a GM, I'm not hiring a coach that I can control. Like, I'm hiring the hopefully the best person for the job, someone that we have a great business working relationship. The lines of communication are going to be 100% open, and hopefully we can have some type of collaborative effort to try to be successful at the end of the day, especially in a place like Philadelphia, right?
Because, right, right.
I mean, you can't get away with that. Like, no. Somehow that's going to get out, and it should get out. And if that's what Jeffrey and Howie and those guys, if that's what their mentality was, like, they should be exposed by mm-hmm. that. And you guys and whomever else in the media should expose that.
Yeah, us troublemakers, right?
I mean, hey, that's good trouble. That's good trouble for the most part, you know. That kind of like threw me back, right? Because I did hear during the interview process, it was a situation, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, where mm-hmm. Nick was on vacation. He found out that the Eagles wanted to interview him.
Right.
They were like, okay, we can come to you. He's like, well, I don't have a suit. I need to like
right.
dress. They're like, nah, don't worry about it. We'll dress to you. Now, did that happen?
Yeah. That's basically how it went down. Yep.
That's crazy. See, that's crazy to me. That's crazy to me, because if you obviously, because for them to do that, they obviously had some high interest, regardless of whatever it was.
Based on Frank Reich's recommendation. Yep.
They had some high interest, right? So if you're coming to me under those circumstances, you would think that coach would have power to be able to, like,
right.
these people are courting me. It's almost like if you choose, you lose. Like, yeah, you choosing me. Like, I'm on vacation with my family. I'm saying, hold on, I can come or I can go fly to you, or I want to dress a certain way. They're like, nah, don't dress that. No, no, no. Stay comfortable. we'll dress down to you. Don't do that.
Right, right.
Like, you would think that person should have some type of control. And right. so for you to say that it's rumored that they hired him because they felt like they can control him, it's like, I wouldn't take a job. I wouldn't take that job
right.
under those circumstances, especially not in Philadelphia.
Hey, man, great insight. I got a couple of minutes left on this edition of Gun on One. I got to ask you this. You've been out of the game for 17 years now, but you still stay involved with the game. You are a part of the NFL Legends Youth Advisory Committee. What exactly is it, and who does it cater to?
So this was something Troy Vincent, my former teammate, right. brother for life, he came to me along with some other former players, Willie McGinnis, you have Michael Robinson, mm-hmm. you have Chad Pennington. Originally, we had Deion Sanders, who have moved on now, coaching at JSU.
Mm-hmm.
Maurice Jones-Drew was one of our original members, and so all of us in some way, shape, or form are involved in youth football perspective, whether it's doing camps, coaching 7-on-7 teams, coaching youth football teams, organizing youth leagues, me being in Texas, having some influence here in the state of Texas. They asked me to be a part of it, and I jumped right into it. And it's something that's been fulfilling in so many ways, right? It's right in my wheelhouse where I've already been working for a numerous amount of years. Mm-hmm. Me and my former teammate, Indy Kalu, we've been doing youth camps here in the city of Houston for the past 12, probably 13 years now. We didn't do it over the last year because of COVID and things of that nature or what have you. And so just working in that space, but using our expertise because, you know, we've all have played the game on a high level, you know, played it for and been blessed to play it for numerous amount of years. I don't know if you add up the amount of professional NFL years,
mm-hmm.
everybody on our team, I think everybody at least has played at least 8, 9, 10 years in the league or what have you. Right. And so being passionate about trying to help grow the youth space. There are so many bad actors all over the country that prey on children. They prey on these parents that want to get their kids involved in the game. And what happens, sometimes they have bad experiences. And those bad experiences deter some of these young athletes to never play football again. Mm. And so you have just a bunch of guys that are very passionate about it. I mean, I treat all of these kids like they're my own babies. Just because like these, we feel like playing the game of football, there's so much that you can get out of it. And it's not just about playing football, winning games, about teaching life skills. Mm. It's about, you know, teaching communication. It's teaching you, you know, how are you going to act when you lose a game? How are you going to act when you win a game? Are you just as happy about your teammate being successful? And so like all of those type of things from a life perspective, right?
Right.
Because everybody is, we know 90 whatever percent of these kids, they aren't going to be NFL players, but they can take and use these experiences to go and be a great student. They can go off to college. They can go be a scientist, a lawyer, or be in politics,
mm-hmm.
or what have you. That, I mean, when you think about a lot of these big companies calling on former players to come in to speak to their staff, to speak to their workforce, to get them motivated, they're doing that because these guys have shown from their own experiences, right?
Right.
That they may have been going through a tough injury and they bounced back from that, you know, just the perseverance of, you know, experiencing something tragic. And tragic from the standpoint, it's in the public eye because everything, a majority of the things that, you know, guys are doing.
That's right.
It's out there in the public eye. And so it's something that I've been very passionate about. You know, I've matter of fact, last week there's a There's a nonprofit, Gen Youth, which is based out of New York. They did a coach, a PE coach of the year award. And I was like the spokesman for that to help get the word out, you know, to honor the, because when you go to school, whether it's elementary school all the way through high school, you have coaches that not only coach PE, they may coach a specific sport.
Right.
Just football, volleyball, basketball, track and field, baseball. But they also are teachers, and they are teaching subjects.
Mm-hmm.
So we just wanted to be able to honor coaches all over the place and to just be right there in the belly of the beast. As a matter of fact, last week as well, I was in D.C. There was a congressional flag football game that's played every other year with politicians there in D.C. with the against the Capitol of Police Department mm-hmm. in D.C. and some former players. And so just being a part of all of that, you know, we always do camps at all of our tentpole events, the Super Bowl, Hall of Fame weekend, Pro Bowl, doing the draft. And so just being able to be to use my skill set of knowing about football and just trying to, you know, help and love on these coaches, love on, you know, all of these kids playing youth football all over the country. And, you know, it's just a good thing.
That's awesome, man. Keep reaching out and keep trying to change lives, man. That's incredible. I have one final question for you before I let you go.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I'm still trying to get used after all these years of Bobby Taylor, domesticated Bobby Taylor. I knew a different Bobby Taylor. Not a bad Bobby Taylor, but a single Bobby Taylor and a fashionable Bobby Taylor. What's it like being domesticated these days?
Oh, well, I'm still fashionable now. That's, you know.
Oh, I know. That's right.
The look good, feel good.
Right.
It's no longer play good. It may be going to speak good or train, you know, whatever. I'm still about, you know, just the fashion. I'm definitely still about that. It's just, you know, having children. Like my oldest is just turned 18 last month.
Wow.
He's been blessed enough. He's playing football. He's gotten a scholarship going to SEC school, Texas A&M. I have an 8-year-old as well, 5-year-old. My 8-year-old, his birthday is next month, December. He's a December baby like myself. So, you know, and they're athletic. They're, you know, great students. You know, they're learning other languages. See, a lot of things you probably didn't need, like, for example, with me, right? So
right.
I lived with my grandparents growing up.
Right.
My mom, she was for the government, being trained. Matter of fact, she was transferred to Philadelphia and was there for a certain amount of time when I was a youngster while I was living with my grandparents. But, you know, my grandmother had this rule where it was like, you know, we had no pass, no play, obviously, but her thing was, look, if any point during the grading period, she's like, look, I don't care what, I don't care who recruiting you, what articles they writing about you. If you fail, if failing at any point during the grading period, your butt off that field.
Woo!
So, like, I was an honor roll student, like all through high school. You know what I'm saying? And so from an academic standpoint, I mean, I love school. I'm getting ready to go now to get my MBA or what have you.
Go ahead, man.
Yeah. So I just think that, like, you know, playing sports has afforded me a lot of, you know, very good opportunities, but the academic piece is important as well. And, you know, we preach that in our home. I mean, when I go out and talk to these kids, you know, I say, hey, you know, these schools, they have standards that, you know, you all have to reach from an academic standpoint as far as staying eligible and things, because we've all heard the horror story. We've heard about, you know, the hometown hero, and never wanted to be recognized at that hometown hero that was stuck in that one particular place because the only thing I had was just talent. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, man, I'm you know, I'm blessed. You know, I follow you guys. I get back. I was in Philly this year. I came back when they played the Chiefs.
Right.
You know, Big Red coming back, hollering at him. And, you know, I don't know anybody that's on the – I feel bad, my boy Deuce. He's no longer in Philly.
Right, right.
Because he was always the conduit when I came back there to the current coaching staff, obviously Doug as well. But, you know, I'm still a fan. I'm going to be a fan to the day I die. I'm an Eagles fan. I never, you know, really, I don't root against anybody else.
Right, right.
I root for the Eagles, like, all day, every day.
Hey, man, it's been such a pleasure to spend some quality time with former all-pro cornerback Bobby Taylor, who will always go down in the annals of Eagles history as one of my favorite and most colorful players that I've gotten to know through the years. Man, hey, thank you for taking some time to hop on Gun on Wonder podcast. You know I'm going to hit you up down the road, so don't try to change phone numbers on me.
Listen, I try to work out as much as possible, you know, a couple times a week, walk, whatever, trying to eat. But listen, I see you be cooking.
Oh, here we go.
I got a nice little appetite. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if, I know I'm going to have to get clearance, go through clearance if I could possibly get an invite over. But, you know, maybe when next time I know you can make me a plate.
Yes.
Bring a plate, you know, yes. Something.
Yes. Yes. I got you.
That's all I'm saying.
See, I know you're down with the Texas style barbecue. Now I'm going to get you some D-Gun style barbecue.
Okay.
Is that a deal?
Hey, that's a deal.
All right, man. That'll wrap up this latest edition of Gun on Wonder podcast. Hey, everybody out there, thank you so much for listening. And as I said off the top of this podcast, make sure you download and hit the like button if you will. For my man, Bobby Taylor, one of the all-time Eagle greats, I'm Derek Gunn. Thanks for hanging out with us. As I always tell you each and every week, stay blessed, but more importantly, continue to be a blessing to each and every person you encounter. Until next time, so long, everybody. Production of D-Gun Enterprises in Patterson Square Garden. Alvin Shabazian and Wes Pendleton are the executive producers on behalf of Patterson Square Garden. Lead producer is Derek Gunn. Associate producer is John McNeil. Sound design, mixing, and mastering by Alvin Shabazian. Original music by Weatherman. For more information about the podcast, visit gunonone.com. And please, don't forget to subscribe and give us a positive rating if you're feeling the show. Thank you.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.